And Mario Gonzalez, my tag team partner, who has been joining me at radio shows on location over the last 20-plus years here on Sports Talk. And it is great to be back with him, great to be back with you, and getting ready to join you for the next 2 hours and 15 minutes or so with the rest of our crew back at our 600 ESPN El Paso River Oaks Properties Schoolyard Sports Studios. The aforementioned Adrian Broaddus, who delivered another banger of a minor talk last night after the game, along with Sebastian Perez Navarro. And do we have others, by the way, Adrian? Is George there tonight? Is Alberto there? Or is it just you and Sebastian hanging out right now?
So, actually, it's just me and Sebastian right now. George is on his way. He usually gets done with his final class around 4:15, so he'll probably join us at the bottom of this hour here for about 90 minutes or so. And then Alberto was doing the KLAQ morning show. He stopped by Minor Talk yesterday. I just told him, go home, man. You look like a zombie. So he did, yeah. And I'm happy he did. But tonight he's going to go to his alma mater, cover some high school football on El Paso's west side, and he's got a little Coronado Montwood. He's just going to be giving some Twitter updates, some videos throughout the night that he'll be posting, so make sure to follow him on Twitter and X. That's Alberto LGO on Twitter and X.
Fantastic. That is great to hear as we get going on the show today. We'll get some SportsCenter updates with Sebastian at the bottom of the hour. Looking forward to that as we come your way live from Speaking Rock, where tonight you can join John Paul beginning at 7 o'clock. Free live music, 21 and over only. Country Thursday is today. So live entertainment, 7 o'clock, featuring John Paul here at Speaking Rock. And then, of course, this Saturday night, it will be Saliva back in El Paso and playing one of their favorite venues right here, Speaking Rock, for the free show. So Saliva coming up this Saturday night for a free show here at Speaking Rock. And that is also going to be a big night for you to come on out, especially if you love rock like Saliva. We've played them for many, many years since they first broke in, and now, again, the opportunity to enjoy that show this Saturday, just 2 days from now, here at Speaking Rock. It is a UTEP Miner victory Thursday. That's right. The Miners get their first win of the season last night, a game you heard right here on 600 ESPN El Paso, beating FIU 30-21, and it's now three in a row against the Panthers. In fact, Adrian, I was trying to think about this last night after the game. When was the last time UTEP had defeated any program three straight years in football?
Yeah, I would. My guess would be like Rice. That's the only team that they probably played year after year consistently who is just as bad or even worse than UTEP during those bad years. So I would say my guess would be Rice if I had to guess any team out of Conference USA. I don't know the answer to that, but that's a good point. Roberto Andrade Franco on Twitter, a great follow. He was saying, he wrote last night that he wishes Florida International could also join UTEP in the Mountain West, so then UTEP could have a guaranteed win or so, you know, every year.
Oh, I feel the same way. I think everybody right now that follows UTEP football feels the same way. In fact, as we started thinking more about this, see, I thought originally it was New Mexico State. I thought there was a three-year run relatively recently where maybe UTEP beat NMSU 3 years in a row in football. I might be wrong on that, but that's at least what I thought. And I'd have to probably go back to the media guide to go look year by year and see if NMSU was the last time UTEP had won three straight games.
You know, one of the things that I think that's a really good educated guess right there, Steve. I'm looking at it right now. UTEP actually beat, I think it was NMSU from 2009 all the way through 2016. So that was a really nice stretch right there of eight straight wins for the Miners. Then New Mexico State won three straight on their side. Miners win back to back. And then now, most recently last year, Aggies defeat the Miners. So that's the most recent battle of I-10 streak.
You're right. 09 to 2016, they won every game, including an overtime winner in 2015. Was that the Cedric Lang catch when they won 50 to 47?
That was the Ryan Metz comeback. He gets thrown into the mix after Mac Leftwich gets knocked out of the game. So that is exactly that game, definitely.
All right. Well, the point is, it hasn't, you know, this doesn't happen very often, folks, where UTEP ends up getting three in a row against anybody, but they have against Florida International. In fact, great fact, the last time FIU beat UTEP was 2019. How about that? Pre-COVID. The last time FIU defeated the Miners.
Yeah, and I would also say this. Just remember, Conference USA did once have two divisions, like East-West, so they weren't playing FIU routinely some of those seasons, but still, it does tell you that, as of late, Miners own Florida International. And, you know, they also even own Florida Atlantic, for that matter, in football. So there you go.
Adrian, it was a wild game. I was at the Sun Bowl for the first half. Then I left at halftime because it's a school night, and I had to make sure that Joel had some rest and could be ready to get up this morning for class. So I watched the second half on CBS Sports Network and listened to it with John and Cole on 600 ESPN El Paso. And all I can tell you was it was crazy, but I never really had a good feeling until – nearly the end of the game. Like, they knocked two quarterbacks out of the game. They knocked out the starter, and then they knock out the backup. Jenkins and Jones both get out. They're playing with a third stringer who looked like he'd never played football in his life. And the UTEP defense, all they wanted to do was beat you up yesterday. They were playing about as physical as I've ever seen. But after the Miners picked the ball off and were in control, and then Skylar Locklear gave it right back on the next play with the pick, which led to the FIU touchdown and the go-ahead score, I was worried. I thought, uh-oh, this could be a turning point. But give credit to UTEP. They marched right back down, took the lead, never relinquished it, and ultimately came out with the 30-21 win to get Scotty Walden the first victory for him as head coach of the UTEP Miners.
So a couple stats that jump out to me that I did not mention yesterday on Miner Talk presented by Jack in the Box. FIU had three scoring drives out of 15 total drives. Credit that UTEP defense. That's impressive right there. I like those numbers. Only 20% scoring rate for FIU, and really the second half didn't score anything other than that touchdown off an interception. So I was very impressed by that UTEP defense, especially in the second half. And then on the offensive side, they scored either a touchdown or a field goal on 6 of their 15 drives. So that's improvement for the offense, which has been anemic. They haven't scored anything beyond 24 points this season. So to score 30 is an accomplishment, is a success.
Yep.
And albeit, like we just mentioned, Steve, I guess against a team that the Miners should have beat last night, regardless of what their record was.
Let's put it this way. If that team, meaning FIU, had won two of their first six games, and again, we were not impressed by what we saw last night on the football field, albeit their starting quarterback got hurt on that interception he threw when he was trying to make the tackle, and that was it. And without him, they really don't have anybody else. But we weren't really impressed. It makes you wonder, you know, UTEP, I mean, the schedule does soften up. We're not going to lie to you. It does. It eases up in a big way. Does that mean they have a chance to win, you know, two, three more games? Absolutely. Will they? Remains to be seen. But they did something last night that was very much exciting. You know, I think fans were excited. Look, before he left with injury, Jolly had 43 yards on 9 carries. That's an average of 4.5 a carry. And then Javon Jackson exploded in this one to gain 148 yards on 26 carries. That's 5.7 yards per carry. You know, here's the way I look at this team. If they can keep running the ball like they did last night, and I'm sure teams are going to game plan more for that coming up in conference play, but if the Miners could figure out ways to get Jackson and Jolly when he comes back going again, that takes the pressure off of Locklear, who can become more of a game manager unless somebody has to put the ball in the air. Because let's be honest, last night, 14 out of 23, he had a touchdown, and he ran one in as well, but he also threw a bad pick, and he had another ball that was dropped that looked like that thing could have been headed for a pick six. And I feel like every game, Locklear always has a couple of passes, ill-advised, that just aren't good. So the key is, if you can limit those mistakes, run the ball, and just allow him to manage the game, I feel like that will give UTEP the best chance to win. The issue is that when the running game doesn't get going, and then you're forced to have to put the ball in the air 35, 40 times a game, that's where it gets dicey.
You know, I feel like if they were a team who every single game can rush for 211 yards and actually outgain their passing game in total yards, I think that's a win for UTEP's offense. This team, when they find success, it's got to be through running the football, Steve. There's not a real scenario in my head moving forward, at least with Skylar Locklear as the quarterback, where you're telling me that they're winning the game through the air. It's also a testament to him. I mean, he had a rushing touchdown yesterday. He has that nice RPO setup that he does. But again, it's through the ground game. It's on the ground in the run game. And they got better production from their offensive front in the run game yesterday. They just need to see it consistently. This is two games in a row where UTEP has produced a 100-yard running back. So this week was Javon Jackson. Last week it was Ezell Jolly. And so next week they're going to have to continue to try to do that. And this time on the road against La Tech.
We'll open up the phones right now as well, 505-6009. That is our telephone number, 505-6009. Look, I'm happy for Skylar. I'm happy for Walden. I'm happy for the whole team. I mean, I don't want to see this a winless season. Nobody does. And the truth is that they needed that first win. And by the way, they celebrated like they won the national championship last night. And you want to know something? Good for them. Walden's been having a miserable first start with those six losses. They hadn't won in almost a calendar year, so I'm fine with that. That didn't bother me. In fact, I was happy for them, happy they had a chance to celebrate. I know some fans probably thought it was a little much, but who cares? Listen, this team needs to get more confidence and feel good about themselves. Last night, they finally had the chance to do that. And you want to know something? I mean, the way this schedule is looking at, I mean, you know, four wins, it's a possibility. I don't want to say five because I feel like they'll probably, to ask them to win every other conference game right now doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem realistic. But I can see them winning another two or three conference games this season and at least going into 2025, finish with some momentum and something to build on, Adrian, as they get ready for year two.
Yeah, and I think that's what the rest of this year is all about, is to try to catapult you for the future. And it's not a rebuild. I get it. People don't like that word. People don't want to hear rebuild after this program has been in the bottom of college football for over a decade now. So I feel like to ask that of fans is a lot, but you want to see bright spots that you could build on for the future. Last night, some of the bright spots continued. I mean, on defense, you got a chance to see the secondary step up. Four interceptions yesterday by that secondary, and one of them came from a linebacker, not a secondary member, Dorian Hopkins, who ran that one back 82 yards. That was impressive. So I think fans are hoping to see this. They want to see those improvements. Last home game, 12 penalties. This home game, 3 penalties. I mean, you're cleaning things up there. If you're UTEP, you want to just continue the success, but also turn those successes into wins.
I'll tell you what else impressed me yesterday. Buzz Flabiano went 3 for 3. He kicked a field goal in the first quarter, third quarter, and fourth quarter, including a 44-yarder and a 39-yarder. Good for Buzz. And remember this, he also had what should have been another field goal, which was that long extra point after they went for two, ran the trick play, got in, had the chop block, had to go back 15 yards, and then he kicked that to give him the 6-point lead. So you want to know something? Good game for Buzz. I mean, like we said, this was a positive all around. And even when the Locklear interception led to FIU taking the lead, they didn't fall apart, they didn't go into a hole, they came out, they fought right back, Skylar took them down, they scored the go-ahead touchdown, and they ended up winning. So, you know what? All the way around, good for UTEP yesterday. I was loving that defense like you were, and a lot of reasons for Miner fans to finally have a chance to celebrate something positive this season.
Yeah, right? On the topic of positivity, Steve, I just want to say for the fans out there, there's a lot of haters. There was somebody, I think it was Ruben yesterday, who was pointing out how haters were very quiet last night on Minor Talk. They did not want to call in. I get it. This team is 1-6, but if you truly are a fan, if you truly are committed to the future of this program, then you're happy for the win yesterday. And if you're on the flip side, you're a hater, you're going to be out there saying, well, why did he celebrate? Why are they happy? Why, you know, all those kind of things.
I mean, look, yeah, you will. You're exactly right. But my, you know, give them something to finally get excited about. This is their culture. This is how they are. It's how they're developing their football team. This is what they want. Let them have the opportunity to enjoy a win. For crying out loud, it's been almost a year. So, all right, 18 passed. We got lines available for you if you want to talk about last night's game, whether you were there, whether you watched it or listened to it. 505-6009. We're hanging out at the main bar. Got the Guardians and Yankees on right now. Cleveland with a 2-1 lead over the Yanks in the bottom of the fourth with Matthew Boyd pitching. You want to hang out with us and enjoy the game while you're enjoying the show? We'd love to have you here as we'll take you up till kickoff for Thursday night football. Mets-Dodgers a little bit later. We got a ton to talk about as we go to Charlie 1 and get ourselves this traffic update. 600 ESPN El Paso app and says, couldn't attend last night's game due to allergies through the roof. Watched on TV but listened on radio. Want to thank whoever lowered the background crowd noise while Tyche, Cole, and Monster did the broadcasts. That would be, that's a great line, actually. That's very funny. And noted on that one. That would be our pal Norbert Miles, who is the fourth member of the broadcast team. He is the game engineer, and Norbert would have taken care of the crowd for you there, Pinky. So happy you enjoyed that. We've got two lines open, 505-6009, our telephone number. If you were there and you want to talk about it last night, we'd love to hear from you. Adrian, what are, since we have guests in our 5 o'clock hour, including the one and only Lee Sterling, and following that up, Jeff Erickson talking some fantasy football with us, what would you say would be biggest questions to UTEP fans and listeners here today after the minor win?
I would say, are you confident in this team moving forward? I would ask, are you confident in the offense moving forward that they could continue to score points in these games against lesser quality opponents? That would be one of the things I would ask fans right now. I'd also, you know, ask them if three or four wins, if they end up getting three or four wins, is that enough for you? And do you consider that a successful year one, knowing that this is just kind of building blocks type of season for UTEP football? So where are you at in terms of expectations? Where are you at in terms of where you hope this team will be when it's all said and done? And what are your thoughts on that offense that we saw yesterday?
You want to weigh in on all of those questions, 505-6009, our telephone number, 505-6009. By the way, Adrian picked 4-8 before the season started. I picked 4-8 before the season started. To me, and I'm sure, Adrian, you'll probably echo these sentiments, if they finish and win four of their last six, that is and considering one of those six is Tennessee, that's definitely something to build on heading into next year.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, we've highlighted a lot of the true freshmen, too, on that point, Steve. Some of the younger players who are getting a chance to play, and you hope to see those players back next year. I mean, Kenny Odom, this guy, he's like a human highlight reel. Every single game he has a highlight. So you hope that they keep guys like that here moving forward.
Esteban says that this past Saturday, Conference USA was mocked on ESPN for the weekday games. And then he says Esteban concurs. Look, Esteban, we don't like weekday games any more than you do or the ESPN folks, but we know why Conference USA is doing it. They're doing it for the money and for the exposure. They decided that if they can have a month to themselves during the week, like the MAC does in November, and what I believe the Sun Belt might even be doing in September, then that will give the conference and their teams more exposure. Like last night, UTEP pretty much had that game to themselves, with the exception of one other contest, which I believe was the Western Kentucky game, right? Western Kentucky, Louisiana Tech?
Yeah, it was Western and then Sam. And Western ended up distancing out, kind of like UTEP did, because Sam's quarterback goes out in that game, just like FIU's quarterback went out yesterday, and their opponent rallied back and won.
And by the way, Esteban, don't worry. Starting in 2026, you won't have to deal with weeknight games anymore, because they'll be in the Mountain West, and now it'll just be Saturday night late night games. That's the trade out. So there might be 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock kickoffs versus Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday nights, like we see with the Mountain West.
Steve, no one can be happy. I mean, 2 years ago, everybody's getting mad because these games are on Facebook Watch or whatever, and Stadium and stuff like that. And then 3 years ago, before that, it's all Conference USA TV. No one can be happy. I'm going to say there, no one is going to be happy no matter what.
I'm with you. All right, let's go to Domingo. He'll be first up today here on a Thursday edition of the show. Domingo, what's going on, man?
How you doing, Captain? First of all, how was Yom Kippur?
It was very good. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. It was good on Saturday. Thanks for asking.
Okay. Yeah, I'm very happy for last night's big win against FIU. It's going to give them hope in the future. Maybe it'll give them hope for the rest of the season, so maybe they can win the final game of the season, the big one against NSU in November. That's going to be big. But I have hope. I'm very happy from last night. Very happy.
Well, I feel like, I mean, if you're a minor fan, look, they just won their first game in almost a year. So if that doesn't get you excited, then, I'm not sure what it would take. Yeah, this team just had to get one in, and they did. So happy to hear that. What else going on?
And I'm very – we already know the Mountain West is going to be good because now Hawaii decided to be a full member. But if the Mountain West really wants to do good and wants to expand a little bit, I would recommend that the Mountain West should get two teams, NMSU and either – La Tech or Sam Houston. That would be really, really good. I mean it. They really should get in with you or either La Tech or Sam Houston. That would be good.
Let's put it this way. Sam Houston I can see with New Mexico State. La Tech, I don't know, Domingo, and I appreciate the call. Adrian, they want those MAC teams still. They still want Toledo and Northern Illinois as far as football goes, and they're not giving up hopes, even though Toledo and Northern Illinois originally passed on them.
Yeah, and just because UTEP could afford something like a buyout in Conference USA, just don't assume that others who just made the transition to Conference USA, like New Mexico State and Sam Houston, could make that jump. Geographically, La Tech doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, me neither. All right, let's keep moving. We'll go from Domingo to Ruben. He's next up as Sports Talk continues. 505-6009. Hey, Rube, how are you?
I'm good, Steve. So, isn't it awesome to have kids that you can use as an excuse to leave a game early?
Yeah, it's terrific. It was actually, I'll be honest with you, I was so intrigued with last night's game because it was so close at the half. I really wanted to stay. I did. I was like, I was curious about the second half, more to see if they could win. But at the same time, yes, it is great when you have a 12-year-old who is in seventh grade and you realize if he stays until 10:15 when that game ends and gets home close to 11, he has little to no chance to get up in the morning in time for school the next day.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
But, just to kind of keep it going, that was a good game and a good win for Miners last night. Regardless of the quality of the opponent, a win is a win is a win.
Yep.
Last night, the only thing I regret about my post last night is that I didn't finish it off with a hashtag quarterback killers.
Their defense wasn't it? It was pretty crazy. Really crazy.
That, I tell you what, that defense has shown that it's got some spunk all year long. But last night, they really showed how good they can be when they really apply themselves. I think that those guys are going to carry UTEP through a couple of more games before the year's over. And, as long as we can clear up the turnovers and stuff, I think they'll be okay. I mean, last night to finish that game with three penalties, that stat just like totally blew me away compared to what it was the week before, with 14 or whatever it was.
Yeah, that's true. The penalties were, essentially eliminated. That was important. A lot of things. They ran almost 70 plays. They had the ball for half the game. I mean, there's 20 first downs, and the rushing yards was key. Look, this is the kind of team that if they can run the ball like they ran it last night, they are going to win more games. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you 100% on that. But, we still got to get somehow Coach Walden has to get with Skyler somehow, or whoever the QB coach is, and just kind of get him into the flow of the game a little bit more with his passing. I know he threw that one interception right after we had gotten the ball. When that happened, I thought, okay, here we go. Miners are back. You know what I mean? And I was just like, oh, man, why? How can we overcome this stuff, you know? And the other thing, too, is that one play where that kid intercepted the ball and ran it back for like 85 or whatever yards it was. And for us to turn around and walk out of it with 3 points from that, that was just so heartbreaking, you know? Those are the things, like I said, you know, and you've said, and everybody else that keeps calling in says, you know, those are the things, the little small things that Scotty, I think, that once he gets those cleared up and everything, you're going to see a different team, a completely different team. And, you know, I really look forward to the rest of the season, and I hope you guys are right, that maybe they can pull out 3 more wins or whatever it is. You know, and going into next year, I mean, you know, what better platform can you have than end up the season on a win, especially against New Mexico State?
It's well put. I mean, that's exactly. And, you know, give them something to build on for next year, too, which is the most important thing.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah.
All right, man.
And I was kind of, one last thing, I was kind of hoping we could see Kate again. But from what I'm hearing, he's done for the year, which is unfortunate. I know that nobody's officially said that yet, I don't think. But just from talking to a couple of people and stuff, I think he's done, which is a shame. And then let me ask you a question, and then you can hang up on me. Since Cade only really played in 3 games, can he still redshirt again?
We talked about that. We actually talked off the air about a medical hardship for that reason. But the crazy thing is that even on the games he didn't play at all, he was still the holder for Buzz Flabiano. So technically, he has been in all 6 games. Actually, all 5 games. No, 6 games. I'm sorry, 6 games this year. So he has it's crazy. So that's what's the bigger that's what's the bigger shame. So no, I don't think so, because of the fact that he's been holding.
Okay. Listen, one last thing, and I'm glad you brought up Flabiano. Has that kid improved like crazy?
I've always felt Buzz had the talent. It's just with kickers, it's like relief pitchers in baseball. It's a mental thing. And you want to know, like, think about it. You know, you see relievers that have been dominant 1 year, then the next minute they can't get an out. It's like once they get in their head that they can't get a field goal through the uprights, all of a sudden, look at Zerline in the Jet game this past week, and he hits 2 posts. So, I'm happy for Buzz. Buzz has the talent, and Buzz is the kind of kicker that could easily, he's got the leg. As long as that accuracy is there, he can become a reliable kicker for them the next few years.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and the thing is that having the ability to fight that wind last night and score as many times as he did, that right there alone said a heck of a lot about him. Definitely. So thanks for taking my call, as always. You guys are always doing a tremendous job, and aren't you glad I answered your question from last week when you asked me if I was off the wagon? I'm on it, brother.
There you go. There it is. I like it. All right, Rube. Good job, man. Appreciate the phone call. 35 past the hour as we continue. We're overdue for a SportsCenter update. Here is Sebastian Perez Nevado with the latest as we continue. Pitches. He pitched well, too. 2 hits, 3 walks, 4 Ks, 1 earned run, and a 2-1 lead right now as his day is done. So the Guardians have the lead by a run. Yankees trying to come back off the Guardians bullpen. We'll see if that ends up happening or not. Clark Schmidt started for the Yankees. He only has 68 pitches through 4. We'll see how many more batters he will get to face, including the Guardians here in the bottom of the 5th inning. We are live out at Speaking Rock, hanging out with you in the main bar. Come down and join us. You can watch the Guardians-Yankees. And a little bit later, Mets and Dodgers and our Thursday night football game. That's right. Should be a good one tonight, folks, between the New Orleans Saints and the Denver Broncos. We'll have it for you here at Speaking Rock and also on 600 ESPN El Paso. All right, when we come back, We'll get to more of your phone calls. By the way, Adrian, I liked the Buzz Flabiano line from Ruben, but I really do believe, and I mean this, that to me, kickers are just like relief pitchers in baseball, where 1 minute they are the most dominant individuals out there, and then the next minute they either can't get it through the uprights or they can't find the plate.
Yeah, good comparison. I would just want to, you know, revert back to Buzz's, you know, his record right now, or what he's done in terms of his career stats, I should say. Last year, 2023, 10 of 14 field goals. He was 71%. This year, 7 of 10, 70%. So he usually is kind of right around this mark right here. 70% field goal kicker. That's who Buzz Flabiano really is.
Yeah, exactly right. And the accuracy, look, we know the leg has always been there. The leg's been there since the very beginning. Now it's just the accuracy. And if that becomes more consistent, then he's got a chance to be a pretty special player by the time his UTEP career is over.
Don't forget, the guy he replaced was Gavin Beckley, who's one of the all-time greats at UTEP. So if he's able to, you know, get to a mark where he's a consistent kicker and he's a mainstay for UTEP in their kicking game, that's what he wants to be, and that's what I think this coaching staff is hoping for in the future.
505-6009, our telephone number, 505-6009, as we continue. All right, Yankees, bottom of the fifth. They're on the they're playing defense. Guardians have two outs, a 2-1 lead. We'll come back, tell you more, and take more of your phone calls. Love to keep this UTEP talk going as sports talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso. Well, that's a cliffhanger. We were supposed to broadcast live from the district yesterday. However, we had a spectrum outage at the radio station that didn't end until late last night. It forced us to stay at the radio station. And I'll be honest with you, Michael Rivera, our engineer, our chief engineer, he did a bang-up job to get John on from the Sun Bowl. That was not easy in itself. In fact, Adrian, the same technology we use to broadcast live on location, that is exactly how Mike rewired our unit at the radio station to be able to get John and put that game on the radio last night.
Yeah, thank goodness, Steve. We last thing we could have happen is the first win, not on 600 ESPN El Paso. Wouldn't that have been awful?
It would have been awful. I can't even imagine. So, but quick thinking by Mike. He took care of business, and luckily we're able to bring that game to you. But, yes, it was not and listen, we love being live at the district. I'm not going to lie to you. It's a great place for us to hang out and be. We were looking forward to it tomorrow. We had tons of tickets to give away, which they gave away without us. But, yep, sometimes just things happen. So we had to. We went right up until showtime, by the way. This is another thing people don't realize. We tried right up until 4 o'clock to broadcast from the district. I think, Adrian, we decided to scrap it 5 minutes before airtime.
Yeah, it was right up to basically at the buzzer. We had to scrap it, and appreciate our friends out at the District West. People stopped by. They got some tickets, and they were very hyped for the UTEP win. They were saying, well, hey, it's okay. We missed out this past Wednesday, but we'll be back on Tuesday ahead of UTEP taking on La Tech. So we're excited about that.
You know who I think I felt best about yesterday? Javon Jackson. Here's a guy that was a big-time running back, over a 1,000-yard rusher last year at Austin Peay, comes to UTEP, and just had not been able to get it going until last night. In fact, he's probably as frustrated as everybody that he just couldn't get the running game going, and boy, did he break out in a big way. 148 yards, a touchdown run, an average of almost 6 a carry. I don't want to say this is the Javon Jackson we all expected when we knew he was coming here, but he gave us a little glimpse last night into the kind of running back he's been during his career in college prior to coming to UTEP.
Yeah, I really like Javon Jackson as a player and what they are looking for in him as a you know, as a leader, as a captain. But we hadn't seen it on the field. We just saw it in fall camp. We saw it in practice, all that kind of stuff. And you know, the coaching staff explained to us that he had been dealing with some kind of injury, Steve. So whatever had been bothering him, obviously, has been fixed. So Javon Jackson healthy and playing pretty well for the Miners yesterday.
No doubt about it. Sebastian, give me your takeaway on the Miners' first win of the season last night, 30-21 over Florida International.
Steve, I'll tell you something. I went into the booth thinking that it was the greatest day of my life. Being able to see the UTEP Miners win for the first time as officially a student there was unbelievable. Yeah, we're 1-6. Yeah, it wasn't the greatest performance. We might drop every single other game, but I was simply ecstatic. It doesn't compare. I almost got trampled over by the UTEP celebration. Completely worth it. It was phenomenal. A memory that I will truly cherish for the rest of my life.
Where were you at the game last night? Were you with the students? Were you in the broadcast area? Where were you last night?
I was covering for the Prospector, so I had my field credential. I was on field. I was covering it, writing articles. So, no, I did not storm the field as a student.
I like the fact that you were covering it for the Prospector, and you took the field view. Did you watch the whole game on the field, or did you just go down the fourth quarter?
I watched the whole game on the field. I really wanted to take advantage of having the access to the field and get as close as I can. I wanted to see, I saw Skyler warming up, and I was trying to see as much as I can. Sideline dynamics, how the players felt, their eye contact with other people, how confident they were. I think if you have the access to go onto the field, I'm a fan of doing it, because from what you see there pales in comparison to the detail you get in the press box.
That's true. That is true. But when you look at your biggest takeaway, especially watching a game like that, field level, where you see their first win of the season, you tell me, what jumps out at you the most? The speed of the game, the size of the game, the physicality, compared to what you've been used to all these years covering high school ball around town, what jumps out at you the most?
It's definitely faster. I thought it would be slower considering it's college ball, which leads to one of the main gripes that I have against the UTEP football program is that their offense is simply too fast. You look at some of the mistakes in which were made, the interception after UTEP's initial pick. Those are all mistakes because UTEP is going too fast. I noticed it against Southern Utah as well. You blink, you turn around, you check a camera, and the ball is already transitioning. I think UTEP's going way too fast, and they need to slow it down.
Man, it's like the exact opposite of Dana Dimmel, Adrian, when you start to think about it.
Yeah, really. I mean, there was one side for Dana Dimmel that really wanted to be conservative, have a slower approach. This side, this time around, this team likes to move fast offensively.
Yes, they do. They really, really do. Oh, 5 points guy responded with, he ran into Nico yesterday at the district. That's right, because Nico told me this morning on the on Buzz's morning show when I stopped by, Adrian, that he came by to see us too, and we weren't there. So Nico was disappointed we weren't there last night.
I'm really bummed, Steve. So we didn't see Nico. We didn't see 5 points guy. We let them down.
True.
We'll be back this Tuesday. We'll make it up to all the listeners out there.
There you go. We'll be back with a flourish. All right. Hour two coming up next, folks. We're hanging with you live here at Speaking Rock, our Thursday night home, getting you ready for Thursday night football, all the activity, including saliva this Saturday, country tonight as well. We'll talk more about that and get Lee Sterling next as we continue 600 ESPN El Paso.
Adrian Broaddus.
And with that, we welcome you back here to Speaking Rock, our home for sports talk each and every Thursday. We got the Guardians and the Yanks on right now. We're getting you ready for free entertainment tonight. It's going to be John Paul because it's Country Thursday here at Speaking Rock. So John Paul, 7 o'clock, 21 and over, can enjoy some great country music. And then Saturday, the return of Saliva here to Speaking Rock. It is also a free show with Saliva coming to play this Saturday, October the 19th. For all you rockers looking to enjoy yourself, that's going to be great. Cowboys are on a bye week, so no Cowboy tailgate this week. However, that being said, football is why we bring this man on every single week. He is rolling, too. Man, Locktober, and forget Locktober, 2024 has just been a great season for Lee Sterling and ParamountSports.com. He is getting it going. In fact, apparently this weekend, if you love those 45 to 50 units, that's coming up. He'll tell us about that. But first, let's bring him back on the show. Man, it's too bad you couldn't have made the trip from Miami to El Paso last night to watch UTEP win their first game of the season and beat FIU just like they did in Miami last year.
you couldn't get me. You couldn't pay me to get on. They could fly me first class. I'd go on a charter, and I wouldn't go to watch FIU right now.
Well, first off, UTEP knocked out their starting quarterback. Then they knocked out their backup. And it was a third stringer who had to finish that poor game up for them. It looked like a deer in headlights while UTEP's defense was laying the wood. And remember, this is where we met up for the first time last year when we flew to Miami. We watched the Cade McConnell coming out party, and we had a chance to spend the first half with you at the game last year.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. So who had a bigger crowd? Last year? In Miami or last night? What do you think?
Wow. That is tough. I mean, Adrian, we were there last night, and last year was, I mean, one of those games where we pretty much could sit wherever we want, and we did. So is it safe to say that it might have been, I don't want to say, you know, a push, but I felt
I think you had more, right? I think there was only like 4,000 fans at the Miami game last year.
Well, they announced 11 last night, but of the 11 announced, Adrian, how many would you say were actually at the stadium last night?
Oh, man, now you're asking me to do a little truth serum over here. If I said like 8,000, would you believe me, Steve?
Yeah, that's fair. I'll go with that.
And they started off the year. How many did they have for the first game this year?
Oh, my God. They had 41,000 for an FCS game.
Wow.
Yeah, and then they put in another, I think, 15 for the Sam Houston State game, and then they drew 11. So, look, I mean, when you're 0-6 and you're playing this, you're not expecting, and on a Wednesday night in October, you're not expecting miracles, you know?
No, I get it.
That's just the way it is. But you're winning, man.
Just because of FIU.
What's that?
Home and home. Remember there was a couple teams over the last, not this year, the last couple years, they had home and homes.
Yep.
Yep. They had trouble scheduling.
Oh, by the way, FIU is a train wreck, man. That's an absolute mess.
I'm telling you this, there's a couple games they haven't even put in the Miami Herald. They don't even put the results there.
They haven't even gotten in. Oh, my
High
God.
High school's bigger than FIU.
I believe it. I believe it. All right, we got a couple of monster college football games this week. You ready to get started? And by the way, last week you were 4-1. You've been winning every week, getting it done. 4-1 last week. Let's jump right to it with our first game that we're going to talk about. Number 7, Alabama, visiting number 11, Tennessee at Neyland Stadium in Knoxville. Now, the Vols are 5-1, 2-1 in the SEC. Bama's 5-1, 2-1 in the SEC. Latest line I've got is Bama by 3 on the road. Give me your thoughts since Milroe squeaked one out last week against what's a pretty good South Carolina team, Lee.
Well, they played fairly well. They just couldn't seal the deal. That's South Carolina's problem. They've had a lot of close games, LSU also, and couldn't come through in the end. Now, Alabama's got some problems on defense. So he gave up 25 last week, gave up 40 to Vanderbilt the week before, and 34 mainly in the second half to Georgia. Giving up 92 points in the last 10 quarters, that's a problem. Tennessee, which came out, I mean, they were firing on all cylinders the first three games. All of a sudden, last two games, 13 for 38 on passes, 10 or more yards down the field. I think home field could be huge here. As the Alabama coaching staff has not made the trip to Knoxville before, Josh Heupel might be able to steady his young redshirt freshman quarterback, and bye week also could be big here for Tennessee. And the receivers also, they had a bunch of injuries for a while. I'm not seeing any receivers on the injury report. Let's go with the wrong team favorite, Tennessee outright, 26-24.
Wow. Okay. Yep. Which will pretty much end. Would that end Alabama's shot at a playoff, you think, with two losses?
I think so. It would be very tough. Because not just that they lost two games, it's they had a couple really close calls.
Yep. You also like the under because the over-under is 56.5. So there we go. Okay.
Yeah.
I like it.
Not going to be a 51-49 game like 2 years ago. I'll tell you that.
I believe it. Georgia, Texas will be up next. The fifth-ranked Bulldogs are 5-1. The number one team in the country, the Texas Longhorns, are 6-0. This one's at DKR in Austin. Yep. And the Horns, coming off that just shellacking of Oklahoma, they're 5-point favorites.
Yeah, and Texas, I think, might be the most talented team in the country. We haven't seen who they played. I mean, nothing much at all. I mean, Michigan, not close to where they were last year, with 131st-rated passing offense. Oklahoma might be one of the worst Oklahoma squads we've seen in the last 20, 25 years. And pretty much most of the other schools are directional schools. Now, Georgia has not looked good of late, but we have seen their A game when they played Clemson. They won 34-3 on a neutral site and held Clemson to 188 total yards. Since that game, Clemson has piled up 405 to 712 yards in each of their games. And I just think that Georgia's backs are against the wall here. They played a neutral site game against Clemson. They have gone on the road and played Alabama. I don't think they're going to be intimidated here. I think they're going to pull out all stops. I like Georgia here. Let's go with another upset here. Georgia, 30-24 over Texas.
That would be a shocker if, in fact, Texas loses for the first time to Georgia. I don't know if I agree with you, but, hey, we will see. Yep. It's going to be a good one, that's for sure. Moving to the NFL.
Be perfect if Texas wins, Georgia covers. See, like, a 2-3 point win.
Well, there you go. Yep. That would be the ultimate for you. That's right. Houston and Green Bay, we're going to shift it over to the NFL and talk about a trio of very good NFL games. The Texans are 5-1. They're traveling to Lambeau to take on a 4-2 Green Bay team that's 2-1 at home. Packers, 2.5-point favorites, Lee.
Jordan Love, all of a sudden, has his full complement of receivers. And even though they're fourth and fifth guys, these guys are really good, run good routes. They also hold on to the football. He's thrown now for 12 touchdowns, number 2 in the league, despite missing 2 games. And Green Bay has the highest takeaway giveaway ratio, +9, thanks to those 17 takeaways. Texans, 5-1 record, but even in takeaway giveaways here, I like Green Bay at home, 27-21.
Next up, another good one, NFC North battle, Detroit, Minnesota. Lions are 4-1. Vikings are one of 2 undefeated teams left. We'll talk about the other one next. They're 5-0. This game's at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. Don't know yet if Aaron Jones is going to play, but we do know Minnesota, 1.5 favorites over the Lions.
What we've noticed over the last couple years, teams for one game can compensate for a big loss. Detroit does have some good defensive line depth. It's second and third game, so the public will generally go against the team after that big injury. And Aiden Hutchinson, I mean, talk about a good defensive end. Number 1 rated in, it looks like, 6 different statistical categories this year. These two teams are why the NFC North is the best division in the NFL right now. Detroit's 4-1, Minnesota unbeaten. But when I watched them in the second half of their game against the Jets 2 weeks ago, all of a sudden, without Aaron Jones, this offense was not the same. So I think defenses are starting to figure them out a little bit here. I think Sam Darnold's run's going to come to an end. They finally lose. I like Detroit, 31-28.
I wonder if Detroit is going to be able to do what they need to do defensively without Aiden Hutchinson.
It's going to be tough. I think for them to at least reach a Super Bowl, they're going to have to make a trade for one of these premier defensive ends.
Yep, I could see that too. All right, let's wrap it up with the other undefeated team in the league right now, the San Francisco 49ers and the Chiefs. The Chiefs are 5-0, 2-0 on the road. The Niners are just 3-3, 2-1 at home. Can San Francisco deliver the first loss of the season to Kansas City? After all, the 49ers are 2-point home favorites, Lee.
I think they're going to have a tough time. This Kansas City defense, I think, is the best defense in the NFL. They don't get a whole lot of takeaways, but boy, they make you punt an awful lot. I mean, they really lock down on receivers. And Deebo Samuel, this is usually the time of the year where he starts getting banged up. They're just having to use him more, you know, without McCaffrey in the backfield. And you talk about a coach off of a bye, none better than Andy Reid. 21-3 regular season record off of the bye. And Patrick Mahomes, 13-3-1 against the spread as an underdog since he became the starter here. I'm going to go with a better defense. KC, 30-17.
All right, and that will wrap us up this week. In fact, let me give those games out just in case people are tuning in late. Five games for week eight for Lee Sterling from ParamountSports.com. He likes Tennessee to beat Alabama 26-24. And also Georgia to hand Texas their first loss of the season 30-24. As far as his three NFL selections, Green Bay over Houston 27-21, while Detroit will knock off Minnesota for the first time this season 31-28. And as you just heard, Kansas City 30, San Francisco 17. All right, let's talk about Locktober. You got a lot going on. 2 weeks left in the month. A 45 to 50 unit max wager coming up as well. And even a little bonus pick for SEC fans all happening this week. You got a lot going on right now at Locktober and ParamountSports.com, Lee.
Yep, they want to get that free game, and it's basically an elimination game for LSU again. LSU laying 3 points on the road at Arkansas. First five callers will give it to them for free. Call 800-400-9741. First five callers get LSU and Arkansas and me. Like I said, Locktober, 2 weeks of games, 15 straight days of action, just $197, one place, ParamountSports.com.
Terrific stuff as always. Enjoyed it, Lee. We'll do it again with you right back here next week.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right, you too. Lee Sterling joining us on Sports Talk as we get ready for a little fantasy talk next with Jeff Erickson. I had no idea Lee was as down on FIU football as he was at the beginning of that conversation, Adrian.
Yeah, I mean, off air, he was telling me how bad that FIU team is and was. And so, yeah, he was really bad-mouthing that group right there. And he was also bad-mouthing the attendance from last year. So that must have been a big thing for Lee.
Sounds like it. All right. Hey, we got a lot more in store for you as we continue here on Sports Talk. But coming up next, again, Fantasy Talk with Jeff Erickson from RotoWire. If you've got some fantasy questions, now's the time to get those in as we send it off to Charlie One for this traffic update. Sebastian PN, the number 8. That's at Sebastian PN, the number 8. Appreciate him checking in with us as well. And a lot more to talk about here as we continue. But first, let's get right back to it. Jeff Erickson joins us right now from RotoWire.com, our weekly fantasy spot, as we get ourselves ready for Thursday night football tonight and baseball going on right now with the Guardians trying to win their first in this best of seven series with the Yankees. It's a 3-1 lead in the top of the seventh. Mets are trying to get back into their series with the Dodgers in about 40 minutes as they trail 2-1. Good stuff, Jeff, with baseball going on right now. And so far, give a lot of credit to Cleveland's pitching. They have limited the Yankee bats today.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing that they've been lacking so far is a pitcher that could get them any sort of length. Matthew Boyd today was their first pitcher to go five innings in the playoffs. So really good outing for him, only one run allowed. They desperately needed that to kind of limit the taxing of the bullpen, which is the Guardian's strength. You know, it's a much different team playing with a lead than trying to protect a 4-2 deficit, you know?
Yeah, I do. But listen, I mean, the truth is that right now this game means everything for the Guardians. Let's be honest.
Absolutely.
If they want any chance to try to win this series, they have to win today. Just like the Mets. Mets can't go down 3-1 to the Dodgers and blow two games at Citi Field.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, my friend Joe Sheehan has a newsletter. He's writing like two, three times a day, it seems like, right now in the playoffs. He made a point today that, you know, you can come back from 2-0. There's only five teams in professional sport in the U.S. that have ever come back from a 3-0 deficit. So only one in baseball. You may have heard of it, the Red Sox Yankees there. But, you know, it's you know, extraordinarily uphill to climb. So, yeah, this is a must-win for the Guardians. Kind of need to get out of this inning here. They got the top of the order coming around pretty soon here. And if you can get the game to Class A, you figure they're in pretty good shape. Class A has been on ice so far in the LCS. So after getting some heavy work against the Tigers, they haven't used him the first two games.
Well, I'll tell you this much. Matthew Boyd was terrific. I think that was a big story. He gave him five innings, which had to be just an absolute monster boost for a team that really needed it. The bullpen's been good so far. But knowing now that you've got Verdugo up after Volpe just got on with a double here with two outs in the seventh, this is the Yankees' opportunity to try and push one home right now and make it a one-run game.
Yeah, absolutely. Lefty on lefty matchup here. This is a big one for I think it's Herron that's in the game. Yeah, Herron for the Guardians. So pretty big moment right here.
Tell you what else was surprising. I did not expect Walker Buehler to suddenly find his pre-injury self yesterday against the Mets. That's the best he's looked since he's been back all year. He has been nothing short of a train wreck since he came off the IL, and yet he delivered a vintage performance yesterday against the Mets.
Yeah, finally got some swing and miss. That's something he hadn't been doing, and in fact, in his playoff start against the Padres, zero strikeouts in five innings. So it kind of shows where he's been. So big performance by him. They got Ohtani unlocked a little bit. Of course, it helps. As we've seen, there's the with and without runners on base stat for him so far in the playoffs this year. It's wild stat. He is, too clutch. He needs to be a little bit more more potent in non-clutch situations too, apparently. But, big win yesterday for the Dodgers. Puts a lot of pressure on the Mets tonight.
Sure does. Lazy fly ball by Verdugo to end the threat for the Yanks, so they'll go into the eighth inning, at the bottom of the seventh now. Bottom of the seventh in Cleveland, down 3-1. So, meanwhile, let's shift it over from baseball over to football right now. Tonight, Broncos Saints. You tell me, are there any matchups that stick out to you that you want to play as a fantasy player?
I'm kind of curious to see who is on the Broncos receivers. If Cortland Sutton gets shadowed by Lattimore, then I'm probably not that high on him. But the Saints, slot corners, they're gettable. The Saints' run defense was gettable last week, although I think some of that was just the game spun out of control thing. It's not always how it is. I think that it's an appropriately low projected total for this game. All these Saints that are injured, the tough one being Rashid Shaheed all of a sudden out for the season, Chris Olave out for this game, no Taysom Hill either. Kamara's going to get a lot of work. We'll see who else gets a lot of work.
Yeah, I'm curious, with the injuries that New Orleans has right now, who becomes their number one receiver tonight?
Bub Means, maybe. That was the guy that was the most targeted one. I think you'll see the tight ends, Juwan Johnson and Foster Moreau, get a lot of targets. It might be a game where Alvin Kamara just gets 20 carries and 10 targets. It could be one of those type of games. Maybe they find a way to get Jamal Williams and maybe even Kendre Miller active for the first time, get them involved a little bit more.
Let's talk about some of the big trades that went down yesterday or a couple days ago now. Davante Adams going over to the Jets from the Raiders, and then Amari Cooper heading over to Buffalo from Cleveland. In terms of fantasy implications, who gets the biggest boost from those two trades?
Josh Allen is going to really benefits by getting a number one receiver finally. Obviously it hurts Garrett Wilson a little bit in target share. Helps Adams to get to a real quarterback. That's definitely a plus. I don't know how quickly it helps Adams this week, given that he's missed three games. There has got to be some acclimation, even though he's played with Rodgers before. He's played under under Hackett before in terms of like running a system, but there's still terminology that changes and things of that nature. Long term, I think Adams benefits quite a bit. I think Cooper benefits. Deshaun Watson has been awful. You don't need me to tell everybody how awful Deshaun Watson's been. He's been historically bad. So going from Watson to Allen's got to be a big step up for him.
I'm with you. Victor Neff at Neff. He used to be Neff Poppy. Now he's Neff Vic Trump. So here we go with his questions. Defensive choice for week 7 available in my league are Giants defense versus the Eagles, Broncos defense versus the Aints, Jets defense versus the Steelers, or Bucks defense versus the Ravens. So who do we like? Giants, Broncos, Jets, or Bucks if you had to pick one of those?
Definitely not the Bucks, but I'm going to go Broncos here with this one here. We just talked about how many players are missing for the Saints right now, including their quarterback. Spencer Rattler now has film out on him. The Saints' offensive line is in shambles. I think it's a pretty easy choice to go with the Broncos here.
Meanwhile, is this going to be one of those games where Bo Nix can get on track for Denver?
Yeah, maybe. I question how much untracking there is to do this year. I don't think he's got a great receiving core to work with, and I also don't think he just needs some time to develop. I just don't think he's a great option in his own right there.
If you want to throw your questions to us, send them right now, 600 ESPN El Paso on Twitter and X, and you can follow Jeff on Twitter and X at Jeff_Erickson from rotowire.com. More of your fantasy questions right after Sebastian Perez Novato standing by with this bottom of the hour SportsCenter update. Just like Victor did a moment ago, I'm looking at the value meter, one of my favorite tools for fantasy. You got to play it and do it right, or you can go and take a look. The interesting thing is going to be that San Francisco-Kansas City game at running back, because we don't know yet if Jordan Mason is going to go, and if not, Isaac Garendo is going to be a pretty popular name in fantasy this weekend, isn't he?
Yeah, and I've been picking up Garendo just in case. I have Jordan Mason on 8 teams, so... You know, it's a lesson, and I probably should have already rostered Garendo as the next in line. I mean, that's why I got the windfall on Mason in the first place, is that's, you know, I was drafting him in case McCaffrey couldn't go. Because remember, we didn't know about McCaffrey until Monday night of week one, how bad it was for him. So, you know, this is why you buy, why you draft the top backup, why you pick that top backup up in free agency. So you don't have to wait until now and compete for him. You can get him for cheap if possible. And I understand it's tough to carry a guy that's not playing at all, and that's the case with Garendo before Mason got hurt. But now that Mason's banged up, we got to think that even if Mason plays this week against the Chiefs, it's not going to be the same sort of workload that he's had in previous weeks.
What's the latest right now on McCaffrey in terms of a return date? Do we know yet when that could be?
No, they've been pretty quiet about that. They're hoping for early November. I've heard November 10th is a target. We'll see. But, I mean, honestly, with the Niners, I have trust issues now. They have. I need to see, like, fully practicing McCaffrey before I'm willing to kind of bet on him coming back. Obviously, you know, as we get closer to game time in the given week, you know, if he's active or not, and they have to let us know an hour and a half before the game. But, I mean, that's about as much notice they gave us in week one. And, you know, after them kind of saying he was sitting out for precautionary reasons during training camp and the preseason, you know, I understand top players always sit out the preseason anyhow, but I guess we saw that this was way more than they were letting on, much like the Rams with Puka Nacua. You know, it's tough when the teams aren't giving you full information.
Very true. Very, very true. Hey, meanwhile, a lot of guys getting, you know, guys banged up right now. Like, I'm just looking at wide receiver reports. We've got players like Malik Nabers coming back from concussion for the Giants. We've got Michael Pittman, who's back now to fully practicing today. But then Mike Evans has a hamstring. You look at Christian Watson. He's been limited with an ankle. Same thing with Josh Downs of Indianapolis, who's got a toe injury. And, you know, you start to look at some of these guys and seeing if they're going to be able to play. Hard to tell. And with a guy like Downs, it's even more confusing because he seemed to really develop a nice rapport with Joe Flacco, and yet now it's going to be the return of Anthony Richardson. What will that do to Downs as a receiver?
Yeah, good question. I think it might hurt a little bit, although the game where Richardson got hurt against the Steelers, he made a couple of really nice throws at the first part of that game before getting hurt, before finally leaving the game. So I'm kind of curious to see if – I think it's going to be a typical run hot and cold sort of thing for Richardson. I don't think he's, you know, in the clear totally here, but we'll see. He's supposedly going to, you know, he was full go in practice today, and I think that probably hurts Downs a little bit there. You know, Steve, talking to wide receivers, there's two Monday night games this week. People have to remember that, which it's great you get the extra day to recover. In the case of Marvin Harrison Jr., when you're recovering from a concussion, that extra day means a lot. But it also gives you fewer options to pivot to in case he can't go, in case he doesn't get cleared from the concussion protocol. So we've got Marvin Harrison Jr. You've got Quentin Johnson, who missed practice today for the Chargers. You've got Mike Evans, who missed with a hamstring today. So those are three pretty, you know, fantasy relevant players that are going to be possibly game time decisions.
It's a good point. Really, really good point. Let me ask you about another guy we're kind of curious about around here. Aaron Jones, is he trending to play against Detroit?
Yeah, he practiced today, so I'm encouraged that I think he'll go. He was limited with the hamstring after sitting out yesterday, but he was also on the field for Monday's walkthrough. So I think they're kind of just doing a progression with Jones. Tomorrow's practice is obviously going to be huge for dictating what he's capable of doing. Might even go all the way through pregame warm-ups. And especially, this is a huge division game for the Vikings against the Lions. I think information's a weapon. I think they may wait until game time to really fully commit one way or another, even if they do know today or tomorrow.
If you have any of these running backs, Bucky Irving, Rashad White, or Sean Tucker, it's pretty frustrating, isn't it? Because Tampa Bay has that rare three running back committee approach right now in their game.
Yeah, Tucker played so well against the Saints that they said he's earned a part of that there. They're going with the proverbial hot hand, which good luck trying to predict who's going to be that in any given week. I think you just looked at Irving and Tucker seem to be better runners between the tackles than Rashad White is. White has been traditionally really good in the passing game. Tucker had that receiving touchdown last week, so maybe he's still going to be cut into White's workload even there a little bit. You know, ideally, you know, White should go walk the earth for a week. You know, give us another week to see these two so we can get a bit more time just to figure this all out. The three makes it really tough to kind of parse.
Does the trade of Davante Adams to the Jets make Brock Bowers even that much more valuable at the tight end spot?
Yeah, I mean, he's already going to get a ton of targets even when they had Adams. But now that, yeah, he's the lead guy. Jacoby Myers will be the lead wideout whenever he's healthy, but he's not healthy right now. Sat out practice the first 2 days this week with an ankle injury, an injury that kept him out last week too. So right now it's Brock Bowers and Trey Tucker and you, I think, is the third receiver.
Trey McBride was thought to be a top three, top four overall tight end. I don't know how many people might have expected him to be a top tight end after 6-7 weeks of the NFL season.
Yeah, well, and isn't that weird? Because it's not like he's had a ton of touchdowns either. I mean, I think there's like four or five that if I have hit that player, I'm really happy right now with my tight end room. Like if I have Evan Engram, I'm actually okay because I know he's been productive when healthy, and he's healthy now. George Kittle, I'm thrilled to have George Kittle right now. Travis Kelce, yeah, I'm starting him every week. I know he hasn't been great, hasn't been vintage Kelce, but at the same time, like, yeah, I know pretty much what I'm going to get the rest of the way. So I feel pretty good about that. But there's so many others that, you know, Mark Andrews, you don't feel great about it. You don't feel great about Kyle Pitts. It's been kind of tough at the position. Gotten a little bit better as the passing game all around has gotten better, but still, it's kind of tough.
One more from Victor Neff wants to know if Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a better start than Moss or White as a flex.
Which White are we referring to? Rashad White, probably? Hopefully over Zamir White?
If it's Zamir White, he's got issues. So let's just assume it's Rashad White.
Right. I don't know how much CEH is going to play, to be honest. He'll probably be active, but, you know, is he going to pass Kareem Hunt? Probably not. I think Hunt's probably cemented himself as the lead back, barring an injury. I think it's really, until that happens, it's Kareem Hunt.
He said he's got Jones and Hubbard starting right now at the running back spot.
Yeah. Well, Hubbard's going to be good for at least another week. Jonathan Brooks has been is on the return, you know, return to practice right now, but he hasn't been activated from the PUP list yet. Did not practice today, was limited yesterday in his first practice back. So I think Carolina will use at least a week of that before they activate him fully. So you get another Chuba Hubbard week this week against Washington. It's a pretty good week.
Sure is. Anybody else you want to profile that we haven't really had a chance to talk about during the segment?
Watch the Colts. Watch You know, there's so many running back situations this week. The Jaguars are another team. We're not quite sure what they're going to do this week against the Pats. With the Pats on the same hand, Ramondre Stevenson's still not practicing. So many running back situations up in the air this week.
All right. And as far as rotowire.com, let's also talk about what you've got going on right now on the site. I know one of your favorites, not just the value meter, but also exploiting the matchups. Week 7 start and sits, as well as fantasy streamers, is up on the website right now.
Absolutely. So many different voices you can hear on RotoWire. And, you know, we don't all speak with one voice. I mean, I think we give our writers a chance to express their opinions. Maybe they differ from mine, and that's the beauty of it. There, you have a couple ways to kind of, you know, it's the process, learning what they're citing, the reasons why we're citing it there. Make your own decisions after that. You guys can check it out, rotowire.com/free, gives you a free trial. No credit cards required, just plug in a valid email address and you get 2 free days.
One more thing I want to profile for our listeners. You've already started to roll out the college basketball conference previews. ACC Fantasy Outlook came out today. This is a very underrated part of rotowire.com when you start putting out the college basketball material.
Yeah, my man Jake Litarski heads up our college basketball coverage. He's excellent at it there. You know, I don't have the bandwidth to be like the college basketball fan that I used to be. So I rely on our materials early on in the season there.
It's good stuff. It's all up at rotowire.com, folks. Check it out. And like you just heard from Jeff, take advantage of that free preview just to get under the paywall and see what it's all about. Enjoy the conversation as always, Jeff. Look forward to doing it again with you right back here next week.
Thanks, my friend. Talk to you soon.
He's Jeff Erickson from RotoWire. We're going to come back, wrap up Hour 2 as Sports Talk continues live here at Speaking Rock. Come down and check us out, folks. 122 South Old Pueblo Road with you till about kickoff tonight for Thursday Night Football with Denver and New Orleans, not to mention Country Thursday tonight, live music with John Paul for Country Thursday. That starts at 7 o'clock, 21 and over for John Paul here tonight. Let's come back with more 600 ESPN El Paso. Have tied the Guardians at 3. Big storyline going on right now in their game, top of the 8th inning. They needed to break through with a pair, and that's exactly what they did thanks to an Aaron Judge home run. He connected off of Class A in the 8th, and you know, the interesting thing about Class A, Adrian and Sebastian, as the Yankees just got this thing evened up, is that the Guardians have gone to him for a lot of multi-inning saves, and that has backfired, just like it did this time around. And all of a sudden, the Yankees, who couldn't get anything going against the Cleveland pitching today, finally struck with their big bat, Aaron Judge.
Yeah, now it's just means worse for the Guardians here. Not only does Class A get hit here in the eighth, but now you're worried about the next game. And then you're also worried about the rest of this inning, also the ninth inning with Class A. So you don't get a good close from him today in an absolute must-win situation for Cleveland. What do you do right here if you're the Guardians? That must be so deflating right there, thinking that you had the Yankees on the ropes and then just allowing that tying homer right there.
Exactly right. And now it's a whole new ball game. And, you know, I mean, the Yankees, again, this is why many believe that this team is heading to the World Series and could very well be World Series winners. They're just so dangerous offensively. They've got good pitching. They figured out their closing and their bullpen situation. And the Guardians, who, by the way, had a great season too. Listen, let's not take anything away from Cleveland. They won 50 games at home. The Yankees won 50 games on the road, and the Guardians won 92 this season.
Wow.
That's and now it looks like the Yankees just took the lead with a Giancarlo Stanton home run off of Class A. Unbelievable. So, Cleveland's closer has now given up back-to-back jacks with first Judge, now Stanton. Stanton, by the way, has been unbelievable for the Yankees this postseason. He has really carried this team, and he just gave New York a 4-3 lead here with two outs in the eighth.
You know, he's just so impressive, Steve. And yeah, I was just talking to George Guardado. He just stepped in here, our intern here for the fall. He was just explaining to me, Aaron Judge, that was his first homer against Class A in his career right there. That's a great stat in itself. Giancarlo Stanton goes yard right there. Big homer for him to take the lead here for the Yanks.
Giancarlo Stanton is batting .308 in the playoffs, and he's got an OPS of over it's like 1.13. Like, he's been amazing. Judge is batting .182 in the postseason. But it was a huge home run for him. Second home run of the playoffs off Class A. And again, that's the danger factor for the Yankees. You keep this team at bay all game offensively. Now they've got the lead. They just took it off the best, one of the best closers in the game. And if the Yankee bullpen can get six outs, they've just stolen game three when it looked like Cleveland was going to get one back.
How deflating for the Guardians, especially if you're a Cleveland fan right there. You have them on the ropes, 2-1 advantage. Now you're trailing here going to the bottom of the eighth. Well, you got to escape the eighth here. I'm already assuming and ready to go to the bottom of the eighth here, Steve, but this is just bad. And I feel for the Guardians. I hoped that they would keep this series closer, but it looks like it's going to be all Yanks.
Yeah, it does. It really does. So, once again, and I'm not, this is interesting. The Guardians are challenging 3-lead. We'll come back and we'll get you right up to Thursday Night Football. It's coming up in about 20 minutes as we continue live on Speaking Rock on 600 ESPN El Paso.